Our present meditation is on the gospel we've just read, on Christ's being found in the temple. And as the subtitle for our meditation, Virgin Most Faithful. There are two dramatic occasions in the Gospels when we are told, both times by St. Luke, that Mary did not say anything, but simply reflected on the mysterious designs of God and pondered on his providence in her heart. The first occasion was when the shepherds visited the Christ child in Bethlehem and told Mary and Joseph all they had seen and heard. Mary is then said to have kept in mind all these words, pondering them in her heart. The second occasion was after she and Joseph had found Christ at the age of 12 in the temple, and Jesus had just told his mother that he must be about his father's business, the only correct translation of the Greek. Again, Mary is said to have kept all these things carefully in her heart. Our reflection on this second occasion is on the last time that the veil of mystery is raised on the life of Jesus, Mary, and Joseph for 18 years, only to be lifted when Christ began his public ministry. This is also the fifth of the joyful mysteries of the Rosary that by now has been recited and dwelt upon by untold millions of times in the Christian world. It deserves at least a few minutes prayerful consideration. It is the only episode recorded by the evangelists after the infancy narratives and before the account of Christ's public life, the only event just a few verses long in almost 30 years. It gives us an insight into how God's providence deals with persons that he loves. And it finally tells us how, like Mary, we should dispose ourselves to respond to God's mysterious ways in our lives, and in fact, in the life of the whole people of God. In each case, a brief subheading and then a few words of reflection. God tries those he loves. whatever else we should know about God's dealing with souls, we must make sure that He tries those He loves. You might say He loves every human being. So He does. So He tries everybody. That's easy. But the degree of His trying depends on two other things. It depends on the level of sanctity to which He wants to raise a soul. And it also depends on the work He wants that soul to do in the extension of His kingdom. This is so invariably true that the higher our call to holiness and the greater the work in the apostolate to which God calls us, the greater will be His trying us. And humanly speaking, the more unsolicited will be the trials and difficulties and obstacles God is sure to send us. Think for a moment about such persons as St. Paul. Fortunately, He has left us something of a record of what he underwent. It is not very long, apostolic enterprise. Many of his letters, as we know, were written in prison. And at least on one dramatic occasion, they were written while he was in chains, scourged, stoned, left for dead, betrayed, friends lost, hated. And added to all of this, the interior sufferings that he experienced. Think of a Teresa of Avila, or a Catherine of Siena, or a Clara of Assisi, all the great founders and foundresses of religious institutes, of Francis, a Dominic, an Ignatius, a Vincent de Paul. In fact, in the process of canonization, one of the indispensable conditions the Church looks for in people that she is even beginning to consider as possibly having practiced heroic virtue is whether that person has undergone severe trials. He or she may indeed have been very holy. That's for God to judge. But as far as the Church is concerned, unless that person had endured extraordinary trials and difficulties and obstacles, the process of canonization is closed. The Church doesn't even bother with people. Interesting, but revealing. And all of this under the inspiration of God, to make sure that when we wish to identify with those whom the church raises to the honors of the altar, there will be no mistake. We'll be sure to say, "Oh, they understood. They were tried too." We return to the event of the finding of the temple that we might just as well call the losing in the temple. Christ did not have to do what he did. First of all, he needn't have stayed on in the temple in the first place. And if he had decided to do so, he could have stayed on, but simply told Mary and Joseph, "I have work to do." Well, that's exactly the point. God does not generally tell us what he's going to do. He just does it. Then he lets us try to figure it out for ourselves. He will put illness into our lives. Or he will take congenial persons out of our lives. I'll never forget John Chrysostom Chang, Chinese Jesuit with whom I studied in Rome. We became fast friends. He finished his dissertation before I did and was immediately told by the general to pack up and go to communist China. How I envied him. "John," I said, "how lucky you are." Five years later, I found out he was awaiting execution. Lucky man. The wonderful people that God puts into our lives. Kind people. Understanding people. Or maybe just the perfect complement to our personality. We like to talk. And she likes to listen. Perfect. Or I'm willing to listen. And she cannot stop talking. But as sure as there is a God in heaven, he never puts wonderful things into our lives, be they people or situations, leave it to God, without in his own way taking them away. Job is the model for mankind. No matter. This is the way God acts. And the first lesson of the mystery of the finding and the temple should teach us is that God's ways are not our ways. second reflection. God has a purpose in everything He does. We might ask, why does God act in this way? Why exactly did Christ do what He did, as described by the evangelist, who was told all of this, we are sure, by Mary herself? No one except God knows the full answer. But one thing we do know, the purpose that God has in thus trying His loved ones He is not to see them suffer. His purpose is always good, and His designs are always just. Even more, they are supremely loving and kind. What might be some of these designs of God in allowing us to suffer? There are only two mysteries in the universe. One in heaven, that's the Trinity. One on earth, and that's pain. And all the literature of all nations has been struggling unsuccessfully to explain God and to explain human suffering. What might be some of the reasons? In this way, God evokes from us the deepest resources of our faith. Suffering and trial, especially interior trial, call upon our faith in God's goodness as nothing else in life. It's so easy to recite the Apostles' or Nicene Creed. And when we're in the mood, and the congregation has the Spirit, we thrill to sing out, Credo in Unum Deum. Ah, well, there's no melody. And no great pleasure in saying, I believe, when God is bidding me accept what I do not understand. Make sure we know where the emphasis should be placed. I do not understand. But do you know the essence of faith? It is trusting in God that He understands. Again, in this way, God evokes from us the highest reaches of our love. When do we love God the most? Is it not when we love Him for His own sake and not for ours? What cheap words. It's bringing these words into action. It's making them live that matters. This is what trial and testing and temptation are sure to produce in a humble soul bent only on doing the will of God. For we tell Him and we mean it, Lord, The only satisfaction I get, the only joy in my heart, is the realization I'm doing what you want, because, quite frankly, Lord, I don't want it, but I do it. That is the definition of perfect love of God. In this way, God teaches us that He is master of the universe, that He alone is Lord. How we need this reminder, we who are so prone with our pride to want God to conform to our plans, and then people write books on proving, unquote, that what they want is what God wants, instead of our always adjusting our hearts to the heart of God, our minds to His, our wills to His mysterious but all wise holy will.
Please turn over to side B and push the play button immediately without rewinding the tape.